That's why I say, hey man, I should. Shot. No shot. With Cap and J Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. That's why.
In for Cap and J Hood, and you hear that, and you know it's shot or no shot, as it is 8 o'clock every day here on Waddle and Sylvie.
Whoops.
It's slip a fine. There. Yep. I'll have to dig
that
into the, I'll get the, here on Cap and J Hood. Sorry, I did Waddle and Sylvie yesterday with Sylvie, so I apologize. That is E1 on me here, but Meller and Aki in on Cap and J Hood, shot or no shot, here on ESPN 1000, and Jake Cantu is at the controls, and he has our shot or no shot question today, Jake.
Yes, and Shot or No Shot's brought to you by Club Hawthorne. Put a little more action into your weekend at one of Hawthorne's 16 newly remodeled betting bars, or bet the races from home or on the go with the Club Hawthorne mobile wagering app. There's the famous horse.
Oh, bet the races, not the racist, right?
Races, yes. Sorry.
Okay, just making sure.
Yes, yes. And then register at Club Hawthorne now for a chance at $12,000 cash on January 1st. So that's coming up.
Yes, it is.
Alrighty, well, I will start it off with good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Jake.
Alright, let's start this off here. With the Bears, we'll continue a little bit of the conversation with Velus Jones Jr. He stated in the postgame that he thought he had one of his most complete games as a pro against the Bills. He obviously hasn't lived up to the expectations everyone thought the third round rookie would have. So, shot or no shot, that 44-yard catch was the catch to turn Velus Jones Jr.'s confidence and career around.
I'll say shot. I think it's possible. Let's be honest. It's a short list of complete games. In all reality, I don't know if any of his games have been complete. But, yeah, it was a great catch, and he had a big 40-yard kick return. And so we saw on display. The truth is that he, you know, muffing the punt early in the season, dealing with the hamstring injury that really set him back, and he wasn't available to the Bears early at the start of the year. But then when he does get out there, you know, he muffs a critical punt against the Giants. Mm-hmm. Then when he has another chance, he fumbles another punt return, and he clearly didn't quite have a grasp on the playbook just yet. And so it took him a while to get the opportunity to come up to speed, right? Enough injuries, though, have pushed him into a role where it's like, hey, all right, sink or swim here, man. And I think the opportunity to get out there and kind of play, even if you're making mistakes, probably has helped him say, okay, I'm not going to be pulled off the field. I can actually go out and approach it. And so I think it's possible that just having the opportunity to be on the field despite making a mistake has given him a little bit of confidence to go out there and play freer.
I'm with you. I'm going to say that's a shot because I believe it was the Vikings game earlier this season. There was a similar downfield shot that Justin Fields threw him, and it just goes through his hands.
Yep.
And now you're seeing that play come to fruition. I hope to see him more involved in the offense over the next 2 weeks. And quite frankly, it'd be kind of hard not to make him part of the offense given all the injuries this team's been dealing with all season long. So I think with Velus Jones, too, I mean, not fumbling, which is as dark as that sounds, but that was a step in the right direction for Velus Jones as well. So he's made a couple of plays, and I think that sometimes for these younger guys, you just need that one game for things to sort of click. And on Saturday against the Bills, that may have been that game for him.
Oh, and I think anybody, it doesn't have to be just football, but like any sport or just anything in life, like when you're doing something and there's some extra pressure added, whether it's public speaking or whatever it happens to be, you know, you do it a little bit and all of a sudden things go okay and you don't make a mistake and it's easier to say, okay, I can actually do this. I can handle it, right? And I think that might go a long way. So yeah, definitely shot, Jake.
All right, next, the Bears are on an 8-game losing streak. Everybody knows this. And if things go to plan, they will end up on the season on a 10-game losing streak. My question is simple. Shot or no shot, this will be the last time the Bears go on a losing streak that is this bad as long as Justin Fields is the QB in Chicago.
I think that's absolutely
yes.
A shot.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, 8 games, and if you extend it out to 10, boy, I hope we're never talking about a 10-game losing streak in Justin Fields' career
at
this point.
The way that Justin Fields' career is angling right now, you'd imagine, I mean, this team probably never, hopefully, never goes on a losing streak longer than, what, 2 or 3 games over the course?
Or, even if, you know, football seasons are weird, maybe it's four or five, but like...
But you'd imagine if so Justin Fields is going on a four or five game losing streak, he's probably injured for one of those games.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say. We're obviously projecting, and we need the Ryan Poles to be decent at his job. But yeah, but the eight games, I absolutely hope we never are discussing that again with Justin Fields, because I'm trying to think of some of it's, how about this? It's almost incomprehensible to think of guys like Allen, Mahomes, Herbert, Rodgers.
Yeah.
Brady ever being on an eight-game losing streak, right? Mm-hmm. And so if he's anywhere in that class, yeah, I can't envision a scenario where you have a top 12 quarterback in the league and your team's looking at an eight-game losing streak. Like you said, the only way is if he's hurt.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I think absolutely shot.
I would hope so.
It better be. Otherwise, we have a completely different conversation.
You're hopefully looking for a lot of seasons where they don't even lose 10 games.
Eight. How about, we're extending it out. Are you saying 10 games or eight games here, Jake?
Just as this bad. Yeah. Just as this bad. So
I hope we're never talking about an eight-game losing streak with Justin Fields again.
All righty, let's move on to the Bulls. They're still experiencing the effects of losing to the Houston Rockets on Monday night. And they're almost in kind of like a no man's land in terms of which direction they should go for the rest of the season. We've heard it. We played the clip earlier, too. Their pieces don't seem to fit, and they are eighth in the Eastern Conference. So shot or no shot, the Bulls have a greater chance of winning the Wembanyama sweepstakes this season than making it out of the first round of the playoffs.
I would say that's a shot, that they have a better chance to win the lottery than to make it out of the first round, because we saw this team... I mean, even without Lonzo Ball last year, but we don't know if Lonzo Ball is going to be a part of the equation this year. They couldn't make it out of the first round of the playoffs last year. And look at some of the teams that they may have to play, too. Like, you're imagining, if the Bulls do find their way into the playoffs, it'll be because they win the play-in. All right, you get Boston, Milwaukee, or Brooklyn. By the way, Brooklyn is playing some fantastic basketball right now.
Nine-game
winning streak. I think I saw Nick Friedell tweet out, KD is shooting 60% from the field this month in December. Those are absurd numbers that you're seeing right now.
The one thing is that's been disturbing for me, I don't know how you feel about this, Tyler, but watching the Nets, seeing them more on SportsCenter, especially the last 2 weeks because of the win streak, seeing the highlights, Kevin Durant's balding head, man. It is disturbing.
It's been like that for a couple years.
No, I know,
now.
But yeah. It's like, it's the last few weeks. Mm-hmm. It's really like right in your face. And I think it's getting worse. Because he's letting the hair grow out a little bit lately over the last couple weeks. And so now it's like more pronounced that he's got the bald head going. And it's just, I don't know, I'm losing confidence in him.
I think KD is also one of those people, he just doesn't care. He may be doing it on purpose. So it's people like you and me that see it and we're like, oh man, he's got to get that thing checked out.
Boy, I don't know if he needs it checked out, but I think this just needs a new plan of attack personally. But I'm just saying, I'm losing confidence in him as a player a little bit because of the baldness.
Okay.
A little bit, yeah. It affects my confidence in him.
I mean, some of the greats were all bald. Like MJ was bald, and you look at LeBron, he's balding.
But let's be honest, MJ embraced it, shaved the head quickly, and made being completely bald a thing, right?
Yeah.
I think the problem is, sticking with it the way he has and not embracing the baldness. I think he needs to go shortcut, I think.
Okay.
LeBron, obviously, he's a...
He went through his KD phase.
He did, but he didn't embrace it, right?
He quickly
found a solution. what was the question? The Bulls landing
closer
a top four pick or... Did you say winning one?
Winning one, Wembanyama.
Yeah, Wembanyama sweepstakes.
I think absolutely it's winning a first round. Did you say winning the first round of the playoffs, though?
Or getting out of the first round.
Getting out of the first round. Okay, there's no shot at that. So I will say yes. Winning the lotteries. I think they could be in the play-in and make it to be one of the eight teams. I think that's more viable than winning the Wembanyama, draft lottery. But I don't think they're getting out of the first round if they get into the playoffs.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that.
So no shot.
Alrighty, this is a little bit on the holiday side and a little personal. So yesterday I was sitting at my gate in the airport and my AirPods died. So I had to rely on listening to the ambience, pick up everything, where I discovered that Christmas music was still playing over the speakers over my gate. Yeah. And I actually quite enjoy listening to the Christmas music. So shot or no shot, it is acceptable to play/listen to Christmas music until the new year.
I personally would go no shot for me. Now, I'm not, if someone else, I'm definitely a subscriber to don't yuck someone else's yum, mm-hmm. right? Like, if you're for it, go ahead. I have no problem with that. But I personally am Christmas Eve and Christmas Day only. That is the only time.
Really
that is
window.
The only time I don't know why. I don't know if I've ever really gotten to the root of why I don't like Christmas music all throughout December. But on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day, I will listen to it, and that is it. I just feel like the rest of the surroundings of Christmas is already in my face enough. So I don't want to hear Christmas music for an extended period of time. So totally cool for you. And rookie mistake, by the way, not having like a pair of earbuds, not even earbuds, but like, actual just, just headphones with wires. Uh-huh. You know, rookie mistake there.
I was there all day, so I was just waiting. My flight got delayed.
I've got a backup pair in the bag. You got to be ready to go.
Some backup cords. I am going to go. So it was phrased, is it acceptable? I would say no shot. I'm with you, Meller. Once Christmas is over, it's like a halt. It is a hard stop.
Yes.
Christmas music ends. And it's one thing. Listen, if you want to listen to it on your own after Christmas, that's fine. But over the speakers in an airport, like one of the largest, highest traffic of humans that you will find in this country. No, that is a public space. You do not play Christmas music after December 25th. It is over. Hard stop. So no shot.
Did you, Jake, since you were traveling, did you encounter a lot of pissed off people in the airport? Did you just see faces of people who were wandering around like they were Tom Hanks in the terminal?
Yeah, I was bumping shoulders a lot yesterday.
Were you?
Well, that brings it up where, you know, they have those guys with the carts that are like taking different people to their gates. Uh-huh. There were so many of them yesterday.
Really? A lot of hustling.
And a lot of honking. A lot of honking in the airport.
Listen, I hope they get things straightened out very quickly because what has happened with travel, specifically with Southwest, has been an absolute disaster for a lot of people. So interesting to see how this is going to unfold because they're still trying to fix things and doesn't sound like they will be up and running close to how they normally are until the new year. So hopefully everybody has finally found a way to get back to where they wanted to be at this point. But again, it doesn't seem like, based on everything I've read throughout the social media websites, it's not really completely fixed. Still a lot of people trying to find their way home or to where they wanted to go, so which is just brutal when you think about it. You got any more left there, Jake?
That is it.
All right. 312-332-3776. An all-time great has announced his retirement, and another all-time great gets a new gig. We'll share that with you coming up next.
Cap and Jay Hood. Mornings.
ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app.
Yesterday, actually, afternoon, announced officially that it was his last home game yesterday. Not yesterday, I'm sorry. He announced yesterday that he had played in his final home game for the Cardinals. He is going to retire at the end of the season, and he is one of only three players, Tyler Aki, as I, Jeff Meller, and Tyler Aki fill in for Cap and Jay Hood this morning. He's one of only three players in NFL history to win three Defensive Player of the Year awards, along with Lawrence Taylor and Aaron Donald. So now you've seen, he's probably one of the first players who, like an all-time great, I have to imagine for you, whose entire career you remember, if I'm, I'm not assuming here too much.
Yeah, I would agree with that. The one thing that maybe people, and myself included, maybe like lose on J.J. Watt's greatness is that there's holes in the seasons, right? Because he had some of those injuries over the course of his career. So especially once he got to his age 27 season, played five games the next year. Then he got a full 16. Then he got 8, 16, 7, 14 this year, which has been nice to see that he's been able to have that sort of revitalization, almost a 10-sack season this year so far. But no, certainly. He's been one of the all-time greats that I feel like I remember his rise. And like you saw that second season in the NFL where he goes over 20 sacks and he is unequivocally at the time the best player on the defensive side of the ball in just his second season in the league. And you're thinking, oh, wow, this guy's the next mega star that we're going to see in the NFL. So, yeah, he was definitely one of those guys for me growing up, watching him and just kind of seeing his rise, because he started his career right about when I was in high school. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of when you really remember guys' careers and you feel like you grow up watching them and seeing the entirety of their careers.
You know, interestingly enough, I always remember J.J. Watt, because you pointed out, like, 2012, his second season, he had 20 and a half sacks. That was his first Defensive Player of the Year award that he ended up winning. But that season always stands out to me because I remember, in particular, the Houston Texans came to Soldier Field in Week 10 that season, and they came in, and the Bears at that time were 7-1. So it was Week 10. Mm-hmm. The Bears had their bye at that point, but the Texans came into that game 7-1, and the Bears were 7-1. So it was like an absolute showdown. It was a Sunday night game, and I don't know if it was. I'm trying to remember if it was flexed. Or I probably not, because it was still early enough in the season where, and the flexing, I don't remember when the flexing was adopted by NBC, mm-hmm. but it wasn't 20 years ago. It was within the last decade that NBC adopted the flexing schedule. So I can't recall if it was flexed there or if it just happened to be a Sunday night game on the schedule, but it was, you know, Lovie Smith, I think it was his final season, because that's when the Bears were 7-1. Yeah. The Texans were 7-1, and so you had a showdown between the Bears and the Texans with this, you know, superstar in J.J. Watt. Now, Matt Schaub was the quarterback for the Texans back then. They still were, you know, they were essentially relying upon Arian Foster and Andre Johnson to carry them as an offense, and J.J. Watt, though, was the clear star on that roster. And I remember that, I always remember that game in particular because it felt like the two franchises went in opposite directions, right? Now, the Texans never reached the heights that they hoped they would, but they were clearly, you know, a team on the rise. And they won that game on Sunday Night Football in Soldier Field 13-6. And the Bears, and at that point, again, like as I mentioned, that was, I believe, Lovie Smith's last season, where they started out 7-1, and the Bears then end up concluding that season 10-6, and Lovie Smith is fired at the end of the year. And so I'll always remember, you know, the ascension of J.J. Watt kind of coincided with the end of the Lovie Smith era. At least for me, that's one thing I've always kind of like locked in, like, you know, his career ascension, the Bears and the Lovie Smith era ending at that point. So it's interesting to see him hang him up after a very, as you said, very productive career that occasionally was, you know, hampered by some injuries, which, you know, you wonder. It just goes to show, like, when if you're not playing at the quarterback position, time is not your friend in the NFL, right? Like we hark on running backs, you know, being over the hill once they hit, you know, 30. And honestly, let's be honest, I think the idea of a running back at 30 is ridiculous at this point. It's basically like after your first contract, no one wants to re-sign you as a running back because they're like, I don't want to be the guy who ends up, you know, holding the bag when the guy, you know, ends up, you know, hitting the wall. Mm-hmm. So the truth is, like, J.J. Watt registers or those three Defensive Player of the Year awards, and after, you know, 6-7 years into his career, he's basically no longer the force that he once was. And maybe we're starting to see that a little bit with Aaron Donald as well, who's been shut down for the Rams. You know, he won the Super Bowl last year and then was having conversations about possibly retiring.
I mean, he had the letter already written out.
So, and I bring him up because obviously he's the one guy you look at as like a peer in terms of ability to J.J. Watt. Like it's Aaron Donald and J.J. Watt.
Yeah, those two are kind of jockeying back and forth for the greatest defensive player of this latest generation of guys. But the other thing with J.J. Watt, too, that he kind of, like when you're learning the nuances of football, remember he was a master of deflecting passes at the line of scrimmage, too. And that was one of those things where when you're learning the game, it's like, okay, if you can't get to the quarterback, you can still knock down a pass. And in that second season, not only did he have 20 and a half sacks, he also deflected 16 passes,
yes,
too. So you're forcing 16 incompletions from the defensive end spot, that edge rusher position that is so, so important in today's NFL, and you're finding a new skill. And I remember he was like that first guy that I kind of learned about of, okay, there's different things that defensive linemen do outside of just getting to the quarterback. You can also disrupt the games in other ways.
And what was crazy, too, was how the Texans would incorporate him into the offense near the goal line.
That's right.
He'd be there. You know, he'd line up. And
he was their fridge.
Absolutely. But a far more athletic. Like, yeah. I was watching highlights yesterday. He made some ridiculously absurd catches where he basically would block out the defender and then go and almost grab it one-handed and just make these. There's one touchdown catch he made early in his career where instead of throwing it near the goal line, it was almost a fade route, and he ends up getting both feet down, like making an acrobat. It was like, I'm telling you, like, I'll find it and I'll tweet it out. But like the athleticism that J.J. Watt had as a defensive end set slash, you know, defensive tackle was unparalleled for me until Aaron Donald came into the league. So it was pretty staggering just to watch some of the highlights yesterday when he made the announcement, an all-time legend hanging him up after just a very illustrious career.
You know, it's funny. You bring up the receiving numbers there. I just looked it up. So in 2014, he had 3 touchdown catches.
Yeah.
All right. That would be second on the Chicago Bears right now. Tied for second with 3 touchdown catches. And actually, he had 5 touchdowns that entire season because he also scooped and scored one, and he had a pick 6. So he has five touchdowns that season, and that would be second among Bears pass catchers this year. So
it's interesting. Now, and maybe it's because it kind of got lost in the fact that the Texans, even though they were good, they were never really more than, you know, one and done in the playoffs, right? Like, they always were locked into that early Saturday AFC wildcard playoff game, usually against the Bengals. Half the time, Andy Dalton's throwing. You mentioned if J.J. Watt wasn't deflecting it, he was actually, like, in the grabbing it in midair from Andy Dalton and taking it home for a pick 6. It seemed like that was a yearly occurrence for a little stretch there where – and. I feel like it got lost in the shuffle just a bit because the Texans, maybe as a team, never quite reached the heights where you would like a player of his caliber to go, right? Whereas Aaron Donald and the Rams finally, not only did they win the Super Bowl last year, but prior to that, they did actually make a Super Bowl with Jared Goff. So I think about it, and I always default to, I think Aaron Donald is the best defensive player I've ever seen. And listen,
but
for you, you didn't get to see Lawrence Taylor.
Right.
I saw Lawrence Taylor, and the difference was, as great as Lawrence Taylor was, he was able to do it as an outside linebacker, you know, basically as an edge rusher. Whereas Aaron Donald, I've never seen a guy so disruptive from the defensive tackle position, right? And so for me, that's why, and trust me, I remember Lawrence Taylor's heyday. And so I always think, oh, Aaron Donald, the best defensive player I've ever seen. But J.J. Watt is comparable when you look at the numbers, right? Like, he's the one guy who, before Aaron Donald got there, he was kind of doing his own thing that had never been done before. So interesting to see one of the all-time greats hang him up yesterday after, or at least announcing that he'll hang him up after the end of this season.
I think, too, the one reason why I don't feel like I missed J.J. Watt's career, even though he did miss so many games with injury, is because of his brother, T.J., too, who does a lot of the same stuff. And he goes out, he can have that 20 sack season. He's led the league in sacks multiple times. So it feels like you haven't necessarily missed J.J. Watt's career, even though there's been holes in some of the seasons where he's only played a handful of games, because TJ's been just as dominant over this early stretch of his career.
It's a great point. He's just picked up the mantle and gone right to it. Honestly, so T.J. Watt, after having won the Defensive Player of the Year last year, rightfully so, with 22 and a half sacks, you remember tying the record, he finished second and third the two previous seasons. So there's a possibility that T.J. Watt could actually, if he can win the Defensive Player of the Year 2 more times, join that list, which would be just absolutely insane. Poor Derek Watt. Derek Watt is their brother. He's a fullback.
He's the fullback.
And he just is nuts. Man, you know what? He's this era's Cooper Manning.
Well, at least he got to the NFL.
Yeah, fair. But Cooper, a lot of people believe he would have made it if he hadn't suffered the injury that he did. 312-332-3776, reminiscing about some all-time greats in the NFL. Another all-time great who is retired. The greatest safety. How about that? From greatest defensive players we've ever seen to the greatest safety of all time, taking a new gig. Ed Reed officially announced as the head coach of Bethune-Cookman, and it reminded me immediately of one of my all-time favorite clips from NFL Network. We'll share that with you next here on ESPN 1000.
You don't have to wait till you're in your car to hear what Cap and Jay Hood are talking about. Just tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
Say best safety in NFL history. Who's the first person that comes to mind for you?
Eddie Jackson. No.
Second.
Ed Reed.
Who's second?
Ed Reed. And he's in that class. Like, for my generation, it's like Ed Reed, Troy Polamalu.
Okay.
Those are the two that come to mind.
Would you have... Now, I always thought he had a chance. Sean Taylor, obviously, until...
Yeah. I didn't get a full grasp of his career, which sucks. Like, you see the highlights and stuff, in, like, the Pro Bowl.
The craziest...
He's just wrecking dudes.
Dude was awesome. Craziest thing was Ed Reed, all-time great, at the U. He leaves the U, and Sean Taylor steps in and takes over for him at safety. Like, the U back then was ridiculous.
I heard Jared Payton on with you guys
yesterday.
Absolutely,
JP, and that's something I want to share. Yeah, Jared Payton called in with me and Sylvie yesterday when we were talking about, because Sylvie, if you missed it yesterday, shared the story about how he had a chance running with Justin Fields on Christmas Day when he went to the Deer Path Inn for dinner and had an opportunity to just kind of, him and the family, him, Allie, Braxy, and Mason went to Deer Path Inn for Christmas dinner and happened to run into Justin Fields. And, Justin Fields was just an absolute mensch, hung out with Braxy and Mason for about a good 10 minutes, Sylvie said, talked to them, had a great time. Sylvie was talking about how Braxton was telling him he needs to run more and they need so that they can win football games. But he said it was an absolutely very cool experience, which led to Jared Payton, who was listening, calling in and sharing an interesting experience as well, which we will share with you here shortly. But back to the Ed Reed for a moment here, because we're talking about the U here. So Ed Reed yesterday was named the new head coach of Bethune-Cookman and immediately thought of this classic clip from the NFL Network when the NFL was unveiling their top 100 to celebrate the 100th anniversary of the league. Ed Reed was obviously on that list, and I think most people would agree the greatest safety to ever play the game. And this clip is an all-timer too, because in it you'll hear Deion Sanders is obviously one of the greatest DBs of all time, probably greatest cornerback ever. Deion Sanders is in this clip sitting next to Ed Reed, Chris Collinsworth, and Bill Belichick. And they're talking about Ed Reed's ridiculous play where he baits Peyton Manning into throwing an interception. And it's interesting because Deion Sanders starts it. You'll hear him talking to Ed Reed. And Deion Sanders, for a brief period of time, ended his career in Baltimore and had a chance to play with Ed Reed. So he got to observe Ed Reed as a player and what he was like. So this is Deion Sanders starting the clip. You'll hear Ed Reed, Chris Collinsworth, and then Bill Belichick will step in because he's so excited about the play that they're talking about. This was from NFL Network a few years ago.
When I went to Baltimore at the end of my career, I'd never seen nothing like it, because you hear, but then when you get there and see, Ed could have been a Hall of Fame cornerback.
No doubt.
I'm not joking. Like, he had the skill set, the anticipation, the hands, the feet, the speed. He had the hips. He had everything it took to be a corner. I don't know why.
Sure.
I don't know why.
Because he could get them all more balls at a safety.
Yeah.
At safety.
Yeah. He played safety, we knew Ed was going to go get that ball. He studied his butt off, too. He prepared like no other.
I got to tell you one story about Peyton Manning. there was a game, you probably remember it, in which Peyton threw an interception to you.
Manning, pump fake, going deep for Lane, intercepted inside the 10-yard line by Ed Reed.
He had studied you all week. I had his game the next week. Mm-hmm. Studied you all week. That when you opened your hips this way, when they had this route combination, you were going to here, and he knew it.
It wasn't a route combination. It was a go.
Yeah, it was a go route.
He was going backside to Wayne on the go.
Yeah. So he had it all set up.
I'm sure he was dreaming about it at night. He starts. He opens to the middle of the field. As soon as he takes two steps into the field, he turns his back on the quarterback and beats Wayne to the ball. Best play I've ever seen a free safety make.
Peyton Manning, I'll guarantee you, knew where Ed Reed was, and it had to fool him that he got all the way there.
One of the greatest plays I've ever seen in the NFL.
Peyton, that particular play, studying him that week, he pumps that way, he throws that way. So if you look at the play, you'll see Peyton actually pump that way first, and then he looked back, and when he looked at me, and I look like I'm going middle. But I know when he pumps, he's going back. That's why it happened that way. You know, so I was just studying him throughout the week. He's like, oh, this is a gimme. If he pumps, I'm just going to open up, make it look like I'm going middle. But meanwhile, I'm turning the whole time. It was like a punt. Like Coach said, I was there before Reg.
One of the best plays I have ever seen.
I love hearing Ed Reed talk about it. Just an absolute, the chess match going on between the greatest safety of all time and probably the most cerebral quarterback of all time in Peyton Manning.
And hearing Bill Belichick gush about it. That's the best part of it, too, is because
it absolutely is.
Bill Belichick didn't coach in that game.
Nope.
Obviously, he's studying film from throughout the league. I'm sure he had a matchup with the Ravens or the Colts at some point where he saw that play.
And let's be honest, those were the two teams that frequently, the only teams that were maybe the Steelers too to some extent, but really it was always the Ravens who had the Patriots' number. If the Patriots weren't going to the Super Bowl, it was usually because the Ravens were the team that were getting in the way that year. And then obviously he kind of owned the Colts for most of Peyton Manning's career. So yeah, there's no doubt he was watching that film intently every time they got together because they would take something from it. And though to see that play, though, it's pretty cool to watch Peyton Manning, like I said, the most cerebral quarterback ever, who was able to manipulate defenses in the way he wanted. And for Ed Reed to recognize that, listen, if he pumps and I can sell him on me going and racing to the middle of the field, I know he's just going to, out of force of habit, assume I won't be able to get back. But if you watch the play, Ed Reed then baits Peyton Manning into making the throw to Reggie Wayne. And as he's turning his hips, he completely bails out and then zips all the way across the field and basically on a sprint knows where the ball's likely to be. And because he's able to close the gap there, as he said, he's able to go and basically field it like a punt.
Yeah, I mean, of all the spectacular plays that Ed Reed, like a lot of times with safeties, you don't think of picks as like their defining play. You think of these big hits that they lay some dude out going over the middle. But for Ed Reed and for Bill Belichick, the defining play for him is that pick that he had on Peyton Manning.
And it's really cool, though, to hear, you know, Deion Sanders in that clip, you know, talking about it and reminiscing, to see Deion Sanders and the success he's had as a college coach.
Yeah.
And now going to Colorado, you've got Ed Reed now kind of following in those footsteps. I'll be interested to see how it plays out for Ed Reed and whether or not he uses this as a stepping stone to something bigger as well. Because like I said, he whenever you listen to Ed Reed, you see it in that breakdown how smart he is as a player. So I'll be curious to see, you know, the college football game. Deion is, he's doing it in, I would expect, a different way. I don't think Ed Reed is necessarily, he's not
that personality.
He's not flashy like Deion Sanders is, right? But he is certainly a guy who, if you followed football at all, you have a great deal of reverence for the greatest safety of all time. So I have no doubt that he'll have an ability to recruit some people to play for him.
Yeah.
But I think he may bring more to the tactical side of the ball than Deion Sanders does.
Right.
So I'll really be curious to see how this plays out for him as a college football head coach.
By the way, do you know who Bethune-Cookman's AD is?
I do not.
Man who is in charge of hiring. He's also the basketball coach there. It's Reggie Theus. is the so the man who hired Ed Reed is Reggie Theus.
He'll always be the man who replaced Dick Butkus in Hang Time to me. You get that reference? You have no idea. No. Tyler's like, he laughed cordially, but obviously he's way too young to get that reference. You'll have to, I'll explain it to you in the break.
Sounds good.
312-332-3776, Meller and Aki in for Cap and Jay Hood on ESPN 1000.
David Kaplan.
Jonathan Hood.
This is Cap and Jay Hood. Follow on Twitter at Cap Jay Hood.
On ESPN 1000.
And the ESPN Chicago app.
So as I was sitting in for Waddle yesterday, and Waddle and Sylvie with Sylvie, I'm Jeff Meller along with Tyler Aki. We had an impromptu game of good guy, bad guy breakout because Sylvie was telling his story of meeting Justin Fields with his kids on Christmas Day. Not actually meeting him, he had met him before, but having the opportunity just to chat with him for 10 minutes or so when Justin Fields was more than happy to engage with Sylvie's kids on Christmas Day. So that led to Jared Payton, who was listening, calling in and actually sharing some of his own experience, because I thought it was interesting to hear Jared talk about the unique perspective he has being the son of Walter Payton and how he was on, in some ways, the other end. You know, when people who would just catch a glimpse of Walter Payton and would race up to see him and, you know, be like, you know, hey, oh, Walter, love you, man. And just the extra, sometimes we don't think about it if you're not a celebrity, you know, the burden that is like, okay, you give someone 2, 5, 10 minutes of your time, you make their day and they have fond memories of you for the rest of their life, right? Mm-hmm. But if you're a celebrity and you do that for every person who comes to meet you, it can become, you know, a burden because, of course, you've only got so much time in the day, right? And so it was interesting to hear Jared talk about as a child, like, you know, how he was like, just how he just wanted to be like, hey, man, I just want to hang out with my dad, you know, but Walter was always gracious with his time, knowing that every interaction he had might was probably the only one for this person who wouldn't wanted to meet their hero. And so it was important for him to be gracious in those moments. And Jarrett said at the time, you know, as a kid, didn't necessarily, he was, you know, jealous. He wanted to hang out with his dad and his dad's time was being taken from him. And so it was a sacrifice that Walter made because of the celebrity that he had. But Jarrett said, you know, as an adult now, he recognizes how important it was, the impact he was making on everybody else's life. And it was interesting, though, it led to Jarrett sharing the story about Aaron Rodgers and his meeting with Aaron Rodgers a couple of times. Take a listen to Jarrett Payton with me and Sylvie yesterday on Waddle and Sylvie.
In 2014, we were at Man of the Year. Aaron Rodgers was up for the award. He didn't show up. And from what I heard is because he was with Olivia Munn, they could not get on a private jet to get to, they didn't want to fly commercial. So, like, the Packers, Roger Goodell, were all super upset about it, and he never even showed for it. So I had a bad place in my heart with him, right? I met him a couple years later, NFL honors, and I love meeting all the GOAT quarterbacks. And I thought, yo, I'm going to go up to him, tell him who I am. I said, I'm Jared Payton. I'm Walter Payton's son. I'm a diehard Bears fan. But I respect you, like, for what you do, man. I love watching you play the game of football. And the dude just shunned me off, dude. He didn't, like, say, like, get out of here. He was just kind of like, hey, yeah, nice to meet you. Took a picture with me, and it was, like, kind of odd. 2 minutes later, Dak Prescott was in the back in the green room as well. He comes over to me, and my sister sits down with us and talks to us for about 15 minutes, just sitting down with us, having the conversations. So the fact that I don't like the Packers and have a bad place in my heart, Aaron Rodgers, thank you for doing that, because that bad place is going to stay there for the rest of my life. So I appreciate it.
How about that?
Yeah, that's
JP.
Awesome.
For Bears fans,
also,
I think that's...
I will say this. He does a even over the phone, does a fantastic Aaron Rodgers impersonation. Like, it sounded just like the monotone, dry Aaron.
Yes.
Even through the phone. But I will share this, too. Because Jared, you could tell he learned from his dad with the way that he interacts with people and stuff like that. And I remember when I was in middle school, this is like Jared Payton being the good guy that he is. They run the toy drive every single year.
Mm-hmm.
And he would go to a bunch of the different middle schools, and he came to my middle school. I remember when I was at Springman Middle School in 7th and 8th grade. And I remember him being, it was the coolest thing for us because I don't think anybody hated sports more than the middle school teachers at Springman Middle School. Could not have cared less. And the fact that, and like anytime we in class would like talk about sports or something like that, immediately cut off.
Shut
like,
it down.
Focus, whatever. And so when Jared came, it was really cool for all of us because it's like the son of Walter Payton. He obviously had his own story of playing for the U and then in the NFL for a little bit as mm-hmm. well. So it was cool just to have him around, and he would go to all the different classrooms and come and speak for a little bit. And for us, that was just the coolest thing that he, a former like college football player on one of the greatest teams of all time, and then goes to the NFL and his dad's one of the greatest football players of all time, comes into our class and talks to all of us, spent some time with us. It was something I'll never forget. And I remember I was booking him for Waddle and Sylvia a couple, probably about a month or two ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I texted him and told him about that. And it was cool. Like everything sort of came full circle in that regard.
Yeah, no, Jared Payton, an all-time good guy, no doubt about that. And it was funny to hear him share that story with us yesterday about Aaron Rodgers. And I think Bears fans who obviously have disdain for Aaron Rodgers, that's music to their ears, right? Because you don't want the one problem with the Bears being, you know, so bad over the past few years is, you know, I think there's been this, you know, pull where Aaron Rodgers at times, especially, you'll remember that story he shared a couple of years ago about how he became a big Bulls fan watching them on WGN, right?
Uh-huh.
And then you remember there was the Saturday night where they were playing the Bears at Soldier Field, and I'm trying to remember the specifics, but he was walking and then a couple of fans.
Oh, yeah.
Bears
he gave
fans,
him the
right?
tickets.
Was that what happened?
It was up at Maestro's, wasn't it?
Yeah, Maestro's. Yeah. No, so I remember he ended up walking with them like for a 10-minute walk or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then, like you said, giving them tickets to the game. So he has, I think, over the last few years, done some things that has maybe made him a little less hateable, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
So good to hear Jarrett go ahead and fuel the fire and the hatred for the Packers.
Because that's like
for Bears
when the
fans.
Cameras are off, too.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah, and when he doesn't have to.
Right, but when the cameras are on, and he knows how to play the game. But when the cameras are off, it's good to get that behind-the-scenes scoop there.
Still a jerk face. 312-332-3776, Talking Bears. We have we want to discuss some of the weird scenarios playing out in the NFL and how they could particularly affect the Bears. We'll do that in 2 short minutes here on ESPN 1000.